I want to tell you about experiments we've been doing here in Santa Barbara with Xiao Chao Xu and Kapil Bajaj. The Rayleigh number regime we cover is only up to 10 to the 11, which I know is rather puny for this audience, but I think there's still some interesting things. The Prandtl number ranges from 4 to 34, and the aspect ratios that we have investigated so far go from 1/2 to 12. I'm going to tell you right away what the conclusions are, so if you fall asleep, at least you'll know what it's all about. There are three conclusions. First of all, there are no power laws that describe N of R, gamma, and sigma. So everything we've heard about 2/7 and God knows what all, that's not the real world, at least not if you look closely. Nonetheless, for R sufficiently large, and sufficiently large means of order 10 to the 7, depends on the Prandtl number somewhat, there exists a scaling function f of r such that you can write the Nusselt number as a product of a scaling factor f of gamma and sigma and a scaling function f of r. But the scaling function does not have the form of a power law. And you can choose things so that the scaling factor, little f, is of order 1. And thirdly, and these are recent results, f of gamma and sigma within our resolution is independent of sigma in the Prandtl number range that I'm talking about, 4 to 34. We know, of course, nothing for smaller Prandtl numbers, and I guess there's good experimental evidence that at Prandtl numbers less than 1, there is some dependence. Okay, so those are the conclusions. Now, the work I will talk about is done with classical liquids. Now, it is almost exactly 30 years ago that I first started working with liquid and gaseous helium to study convection, and I soon recognized that this fluid has tremendous advantages and that you can vary its properties by changing the density. And so I very much appreciate the merits of the low temperature work in helium, but it also has some drawbacks. For one thing, if you want to change your apparatus because some little wire broke that you have to fix or whatever, you have to open it up and the turnaround time is off order 1 week, whereas I can take my apparatus apart and put it back together again in an afternoon. So that certainly from an experimentalist viewpoint is a big advantage. But there are more fundamental advantages. They have to do with the properties of classical liquids. And they're illustrated in this table here. I've chosen a mean temperature for this illustration of 32 degrees, which happens to be the mean temperature at which we operate. And by the way, we hold the mean temperature steady as we change the temperature difference. And that means that your fluid properties don't change. Your average fluid properties are the same. The Prandtl number is whatever it is. It doesn't vary as you change the Rayleigh number. Right. Now, the departure from the Businesque approximation obviously does change as you change the temperature difference. So, 32 degrees mean temperature. The biggest temperature difference we use is 30 degrees, which sounds like something enormously large. But let's see how bad that is, really. Let me take a modestly sized apparatus that can accommodate a cell of 20 centimeter height. And then I get these following numbers. The fluids that we've considered are acetone, methanol, toluene, ethanol, 2-propanol, and water. And they have these Prandtl numbers that you can see here. They range from 4 to 34. And the Rayleigh numbers that you get for these conditions are 10 to the 11 with acetone, something in the 10 to the 10 range with the other fluids. And water is really the worst substance to use. It only gives you 6 times 10 to the 9 for these conditions. So water is not the fluid of choice for these studies. It doesn't give you the highest possible range. If you want to make a big cell like our friends in Oregon have, actually it would still be much easier because you run it at room temperature and you know it's not as hard as a cryogenic cell, but let's say you build a 1 meter cell, then with acetone you can reach 1.3 times 10 to the 13, which is quite a respectably high Rayleigh number, and there certainly is it will be of interest to build such an apparatus, but we don't have that at present. Now, what about departures from the Boussinesq approximation? Well, again, I take this delta T of 30 degrees, which is sort of an extreme value, I have computed here the ratio X that was suggested by Wu and Liebschaber is the ratio of the temperature drop across the top boundary to the temperature drop across the bottom boundary. And they have a model which they propose that enables you to calculate this from the fluid properties. And you notice this ratio is remarkably close to unity. I mean, certainly for acetone, you know, it's within 4%. For 2-propanol, it deviates by 16%. Again, water is the worst case. Water is far less Boussinesq than the other fluids. If you use the other criterion that the Oregon group used, alpha delta T, it's all small numbers. Okay, so these classical liquids are, generally speaking, much more Boussinesq than the gases that are used in the cryogenic experiments. For instance, Wu and Liebschaber had a ratio of 0.4 here, long way away from unity, at R equals 10 to the 11, and alpha delta T in the Oregon experiment became as big as 0.5 at the largest R. It's to be compared with this. Okay. So there are some advantages to using these classical fluids. I have a picture here of the apparatus, but nobody wants to see that, so I throw it away. Well, what do the results look like? Here's the usual logarithmic Nusselt versus Rayleigh plot, which tells you essentially nothing except that, you know, crudely speaking, you can put a straight line through the data. And crudely speaking, that straight line has a slope of 2.7. And, right, so, but it does tell you one thing. It tells you that just about every, well, I should emphasize that the various symbols here are our data, and that the pluses, the pluses are the French group, Chavan et al., and the X's are Nimila et al., the Oregon group. I think the message here is that all of those experiments are more or less in the same neighborhood. They don't disagree with each other. The data by Ashkenazi and Steinberg are a factor of 1.6 higher, and I don't really know why that is. Although I think Victor said that their measurements are really relative measurements that are not absolute. So I certainly was not able to infer that from their publication. Well, let's look at our own data in a little bit more detail. And we'll do that by doing the usual reduced plot of Nusselt times Rayleigh to some power. And for lack of any better ideas, I chose Rayleigh to the minus 2/7 because that's been a popular exponent. And if indeed Rayleigh to the 2/7 were the correct power law, then we should get a constant here independent of Rayleigh number. And if there's any power law at all, then we should get a straight line on this plot. And the slope of that straight line would be the exponent minus 2/7. And as we can see here for the various aspect ratios, there's really no range of Rayleigh numbers where you can describe the data by a straight line. Therefore, there are no power laws. Now, I should say that we can only make that statement by virtue of the resolution of the measurements. Let me show you again some of the other data, and it doesn't matter which data set we look at. This graph happens to have the Oregon data on the same plot with ours. And the typical scatter in other data sets are of order 1 or 2%. And the typical scatter in our data are at the level of 0.1%, so they are an order of magnitude or more precise than other measurements. And this resolution, this much improved resolution, enables us to make the statement that there is no unique exponent. Pardon? I don't know. We just do the best we can, and you would have to ask the other people about that. No, but the properties don't vary. The mean properties don't change as you change the Rayleigh number. And that, well, the same with helium if you keep, if no, not the same with helium, because you change the density and, okay. Yeah. Right. And you mean you could, for instance, assert that there is curvature over this range of 2 decades? Well, if you can make that assertion, I don't know why you haven't yelled it from the rooftops. Because to me, it's a very profound question whether there is a power law. And so far, I've heard everybody talk about power laws, and I'm asserting that there are none. Huh? Well, I think we are here. To the 9 to 10 of the 10. It isn't 2-7, that's true. It isn't anything. Okay, let me move on. I have comparisons with other data sets, but I don't think much purpose is served by showing them unless somebody raises particular questions about that. Let me then pursue this idea that there is no power law a little bit further. Okay, so obviously, I think what people sort of were hinting at, obviously, you know, for a given aspect ratio, you can only cover something like a couple of decades. Because the biggest delta T you want to put on is about 30 degrees, and a decade down means you have 3/10 of a degree delta T across the sample. Well, you know, I'd go down to 1/10, but below 1/10, you have about a 1 millidegree resolution, so that is 1%, and I'm not happy with the 1% measurement. So basically, you know, you're stuck with 2 decades of precise measurements for a given aspect ratio. Right? But now we can look locally here and see what the local slope is, and that gives us an effective exponent. And we can do that for each aspect ratio. And we did that, I did that particularly by picking half a decade of data and fitting a straight line to it on this log-log plot. And that gives me a local exponent. I can see how that exponent evolves as a function of Rayleigh number. And when I do that, I get sort of these results. Okay, so for the different aspect ratios, 0.5, 1, 2, 3, and 12.8, I get these various local exponents, effective exponents gamma. And I find that within the resolution, the exponents are not dependent on the aspect ratio. Well, that's fairly nice. That means, what's that? What do you mean a big prefactor? Yeah. That goes away when you take the logarithmic derivative.
It does, but there's an effect of that.
No. I'll get back to that, Bob. Give me a few minutes. Okay, the slope on a log-log plot doesn't depend on the aspect ratio. That's what these data are saying. Obviously, always within the experimental resolution, which you can see here is about 0.002 or so in the exponent. With the kind of analysis I performed. Well, that really means that you can take each aspect ratio and multiply the data by a constant of order 1 so that all the aspect ratios are collapsed. Okay, so that really means that you can write the Nusselt number in this functional form. Right? Since gamma effective does not depend on gamma, we can write this function of 3 variables as a product of a prefactor and a function of Rayleigh only. Right, this thing has the property that its logarithmic derivative is independent of gamma. So we take all the data at the different aspect ratios and multiply them by whatever constant we need here, f little f, and we can arbitrarily pick one of the aspect ratios as the reference to which we will scale all the others. And I chose gamma equals 1 for that purpose, these data here, and then multiplied all the others by an aspect ratio dependent constant and brought everything together onto a single scaling function. Okay. Now you can also see a little bit more the resolution of the data. This bar here corresponds to 1% in the Nusselt number, and you can see the scatter and the data as well as systematic differences from one aspect ratio to another are of order a tenth of a percent or so. Yes? I'll show you the aspect ratio dependence in a minute. So
that
Well, to the extent that you see this, to test this, you require it requires that the ranges covered with the different aspect ratios overlap, and to some extent they do. Right? I mean, here's gamma equals 1, it goes down to, no, sorry, this is gamma equals 1/2, goes down to here. And gamma equals 1 picks up there, and where they overlap, they certainly do agree with each other. Okay? But you can only do it to a limited extent. Okay. Well, Well, I think you will agree that if I left the Prandtl out of the little f, then it will be okay. Right? I think you're questioning whether the Prandtl number dependence can be dealt with in this fashion, within experimental error, it can over the Prandtl number range we're talking about, because I will show you that the Nusselt number is essentially independent of Prandtl number. Otherwise, I couldn't make that statement. All of this is within the experimental resolution. I mean, if you want to look a little more closely, right? Yeah. Well, we'll get back to the Prandtl number dependence in a moment. Probably at this stage of my talk, I should have left the sigma out of here. Okay, and then you would have been happier. Yes, I understand. Well, Victor, we'll see in a moment, if you give me a chance, just, you know, how far we are with this. And we're certainly, I mean, this is a project that is underway, and in fact, it's cooking over there in Broider Hall right now, churning out new data. So, you know, it's, I'm telling you the story as of today. But I do want to just emphasize that this plot really shows you that, you know, first of all, 2/7 is absolutely out. And in fact, the exponent varies as you move around here. And in fact, Bob, with regard to your numerical work, you know, here at 10 to the 6, I'm not sure that this behavior is consistent with what you were showing. But then again, when I haven't had a chance to compare that carefully, so it's worth looking at. Pardon? It's periodic, yeah. Well, log Rayleigh. Maybe. Well, that's right. Okay. Yeah, I know. That's this stuff here. See, that's this stuff here. So, yeah. Yeah, I think you had 6, right? Gamma equals 6.
Yeah, I did. Right.
Yeah, I think we'll run 6.
Well, what important is that I should run a series of calculations at all my variables for triangle number 4.
That would be useful.
Yeah.
That'd be very useful. All right. Okay. Right. Now, what about this prefactor? Well, we'll see. I have to learn more about your results. What about this prefactor, little f? Well, here's kind of a crazy plot of it. It's 1 over f against log of gamma. And don't ask me why, except that it makes a nice straight line. Except for one point. And I don't know what's wrong with that point. I've been scratching my head about it. We have to reinvestigate that. There must be something slightly wrong somewhere. But, I mean, the other points, you know, are just beautifully on a straight line. And so there's the aspect ratio dependence. Empirical. Pardon? This point? Well, I don't know why it's off. It's aspect ratio 3. Yeah. The log of 3 is 0.5. That's where it is. So, anyway, there seems to be, except for this one nasty fellow here, there seems to be a smooth function. And here's a functional form that fits the data. Of course, there's no theoretical basis for this so far as I know. Well, all right. That's so much for the data. Now, if they don't obey power laws, do they obey something else? Well, there's this beautiful new theory of Grossman and Loser. And Detlev Loser was kind enough to tell me how to compare with his predictions. And he says, here's a prediction. It's a sum of two power laws, Rayleigh to the 1/4 plus Rayleigh to the 3/7, at least for the Prandtl numbers that we are talking about. This should be valid according to Grossman and Loser for Prandtl numbers greater than 2. And we're talking about 4. Whether 4 is enough greater than 2 for this to apply is an open issue. But lo and behold, it works. Because if this is the right function, then you can plot this quantity here against that quantity, and you should get a straight line. And when you do that, you get a straight line. The data, you know, within their scatter fall on a straight line. So this is very encouraging that works so well. This happens to be for gamma equals 1. And, of course, we get the coefficients of the straight line, right? The A's and B's in there. So those are the A's and B's in this formula. So far, everything I've told you is about Prandtl of 4, all acetone. What about the other aspect ratios? Well, you can make the Grossman-Loser plots for all of them. Well, so far the experimental data, Prandtl is constant. Okay, so it's not an issue. I could have left it out. And I'll get to that. But, Bernard, I was very concerned about that issue because I somehow sense it ought to be the convective heat transport, right? And so I corresponded with both Siegfried Grossman and Detlev Loser about that. And, well, there's no clear-cut answer from the theorists, so I tried both. And Nusselt works a little better than Nusselt minus 1 in the sense that it goes down to lower Rayleigh numbers that it works. For Nusselt minus 1, you get departures at slightly higher Rayleigh numbers, but at high enough Rayleigh number, you know, above 10 to the 8, it both work. All right, so here are the different aspect ratios, and it all looks fine, except if you look very closely now, I mean, we do a least squares fit of a straight line to all of those, and here are the coefficients. The A, it's not surprising. That's the aspect ratio dependence that you see there. But the slope, The slope also varies slightly, very slightly, with aspect ratio, and that is not so nice. We would have liked to have seen that slope independent of aspect ratio. But we're looking really at some very fine details at this point. So let's then take the scaling function f of r that I had introduced earlier and do the Grossmann-Loza plot with that. Okay, we get the various aspect ratios all here collapsed. And this middle one was now fitted to a straight line, and that's the line you see here. And it has these coefficients that you already saw on the previous graph, but you probably didn't recognize. And now we see, well, we start getting departures here, but the theorists will say that's not surprising because the Rayleigh number is getting too small. And indeed, Grossmann and Loza argue that the Reynolds number of the large-scale flow, which they predict in terms of the Rayleigh number, should be over 50, and that condition that they stipulate is satisfied right about here. Right, so to the left of that, we should forget about comparing with them. So that's probably all right. But when I go up here, I also see some problems. But you have to understand these problems are at the level of maybe 3 or 4 tenths of a percent of the Nusselt number. So I am hard-pressed to assert that this is outside of possible systematic experimental errors. Right, so as stimulating as this little departure from theory may be, I cannot really assert that it is for real. We are, by the way, at a Rayleigh number of 10 to the 11 here. Obviously, it would be lovely to go to 10 to the 13, which we could do with a 1 meter acetone cell. Right? Pardon? Oh. In that case, I will push on. That's all right. That's all right. You are more generous than Bob Kerr, I see. So now we want to look at the Prandtl number dependence. Now the Prandtl number dependence, we all agree, is extremely weak. So you have to have very not only precise but also accurate measurements. And now we need to compare different fluids. Okay, acetone, methanol, ethanol, and 2-propanol. Now, if we are dependent upon the fluid properties that people have measured for these, then these fluid properties will have systematic errors that will differ from one fluid to another. And this will obscure the Prandtl number dependence that we seem to extract from these measurements. Therefore, we must determine the relevant properties ourselves. We do that by building a thin convection cell where we can measure the onset of Rayleigh-Binard convection. And this is what you see here. Here's the experimental thermal conductivity divided by the calculated diffusive thermal conductivity, calculated or not calculated, extracted from the literature. And you see here we are below 1, which obviously is not right. That's because this lambda calculated is not right. It should be up here, should be 3%. Right? This should be shifted up by 3%. And then we get the onset of convection here, the delta T critical. And the calculated delta T critical is down here. Now, this scale doesn't start at 0, right? I mean, the delta measured value is about 6 degrees, and the calculated value is about 5.2 degrees. Now, this is the worst case that I encountered, the biggest disagreement, and it is for 2-propanol. But now that we know what it is, we have a calibration. We can basically use delta T critical to scale the Rayleigh axis, and we can use this conductivity to scale the Nusselt axis. And now, of course, our measurements also are subject to systematic errors, because, and the biggest one is really the uncertainty in the thickness of the cell, which is about 0.5% or so. These are rather thin cells, so the thickness is uncertain by 0.5%. And that means 1.5% in the Rayleigh number. But since all fluids are measured in the same cell, this error is common to all of them and will not obscure the Prandtl number dependence. What?
How pure is
the fluid? Well, the all but acetone are extremely pure. I should have perhaps said a word or two about that. basically all of these chemicals you can buy out of the bottle at 99.9% purity or better. Acetone, really in retrospect, is not my fluid of choice, except that it gives me the highest possible Rayleigh number. It invariably contains about 0.4% water, and it's a binary mixture. If you look at onset, you will get squares, but I really don't think it has any effect on the high Rayleigh number turbulent state. Huh? Yeah, but we measure it for the fluid that we use, right? So, in fact, I've deliberately put some more water in to see what that does and all stuff like that. Okay, so we have our calibration, and now we can look at our results. And here are the results for these four fluids. They're all crowded together. Isopropanol is up here, and acetone is down there. So Pronyl equals 4 is here, 14 is there, 34 is there. And now the sad part of the story, or maybe the fun part of the story, I don't know, it depends on how you look at it, is that this is Grossmann laws that fitted to the acetone data, and now you can use the sigma dependence to predict what should happen for the other fluids. We should get this for methanol, this for ethanol, and that for isopropanol. And clearly the experiments are in dramatic disagreement with that Pronyl, with the predicted Pronyl number dependence. Now, I point out that the prediction already is quite weak. It's an admixture of sigma to the minus 1/12 and sigma to the minus 1/7. Nonetheless, the measured dependence is at least an order of magnitude less than that. A little bit more about that. Let me take these data here and really... Essentially. What do they see? But no. Leo and Eki looked between 4 and 7.5 or something like that, which is a rather narrow range. But and Bob, who's probably here, isn't quite sure whether the dependence they see is outside of experimental systematic errors or not, but I think we should let him speak to that issue. And okay, I want to look at these data here a little bit more. I want to blow up this region, and because it's sort of interesting to see how these things go there. And I'm only showing the acetone data and the isopropanol data. And this is the Grossmann-Loser fit to acetone over a somewhat wider range. And now the interesting thing is that here we start getting, you know, with this very high resolution here, we start getting a departure from the Grossmann-Loser fit. And that happens just about at the place where the Reynolds number of the boundary layer is becomes too small, according to them. For isopropanol, here the data are more or less parallel to these data, right? Although you might want a bigger range. Unfortunately, for aspect ratio 3, we don't have a bigger range. And then they turn over, and they turn over at a somewhat larger Rayleigh number, and that's consistent with the fact that the Pronyl number is larger. You would also expect that, although whether it's quantitatively consistent with Grossmann and Loser is not settled at this point. Well, anyway, in this range, where the two data sets are more or less parallel to each other on this parametric plot, we assume that we are in some kind of a scaling regime where we have this function f of r. And in this scaling regime, then, there's a 2% difference in the Nusselt number between Pronyl equals 4 and Pronyl equals 34. Now, that's also plotted here, where I show Nusselt of Rayleigh equals 2.5 × 10⁷, which was just in that scaling regime, as a function of Pronyl. And here is acetone, methanol, ethanol, propanol. And the change from here to there is 2%. And I cannot really assert that the 2% is outside of possible experimental systematic errors. It's outside of random errors, but it's not necessarily outside of systematic errors. So basically, the conclusion is that within this 2% or so, there is virtually no Pronyl number dependence. Contrary to that, Grossmann and Loser predict these things down here, which we already saw is wrong. Now, there are data coming out right now, and I went and harvested the latest this morning before we came over here and put them quickly on this graph. And these are for gamma equals 2. The smaller aspect ratio enables us to go to larger Rayleigh numbers. We have a wider range over which we are in the scaling regime. And indeed, here are the acetone data. There are the isopropanol data, and they follow each other. They're parallel to each other. But in this case, the distance between them is only 0.5%. I don't know why it was 2% for gamma equals 3 and why it's 0.5% for gamma equals 2. It probably reflects something about systematic errors in the experiment. But in any event, it's a very, very tiny Prandtl number dependence compared to what one had really sort of expected. Questions? Well, this is, you know, the log-log plot. I mean, the slope is a deviation from 2/7, and gee, I mean, I don't remember. We can look back at the effective exponent graph, you know, and see what it is. Well, so we want to look at 7.5. At 7.5, we're down here. Okay, so we're at 0.275, essentially. So the slope you see here is 0.275 minus 2/7. Okay, so that's what this slope is. 0.275 minus point, what is it, 0.284, whatever. It's about 0.01. Okay. Now, if I can find my way back, I will conclude by once more asserting what I've already said. Power laws don't fit the data. For R sufficiently large means bigger than something like 10 to the 7, there exists a scaling function f of R, so that I can write the Nusselt number as a prefactor, which now it turns out doesn't depend on sigma, so that addresses that issue that was raised earlier, but it does depend on gamma, and times a scaling function f of R. And the proposal of Grossmann and Loza of a crossover from 1/4 to 3/7 fits the data reasonably well. Maybe some small departures at large Rayleigh, but too small to really make a big issue of it. But, you know, one would like to really look more closely at that experimentally by going to higher Rayleigh numbers with the same kind of precision, the same kind of 0.1% precision. Prandtl number dependence was studied over the range 4 to 34 and increases by maybe 2%. Theory predicts a decrease of 20%, but really the Prandtl number is probably, I mean, somehow deep in my heart I feel that if there's a 2% increase over one decade, that it's probably a constant. If you made a theory, you would probably have to make one that says it's constant. It would be pretty hard to predict such a small increase in any sensible way, but that's religion, I guess, in a way. Long-range plans, well, we would like to make measurements up to 10 to the 13, and we would also like to extend measurements with the same kind of precision to gases, not cryogenic ones, but CO2 or SF6 or various things. And then the other very interesting possibility to me is to look at gas mixtures. Gases give you the opportunity to look at Prandtl numbers near 0.7, and there's nothing below that until you get down to the liquid metals in the 10 to the minus 2 range. But in between, there are these wonderful things, these mixtures of heavy and light gases. If you take something like hydrogen and xenon and mix them together, then you can get Prandtl numbers as small as 0.17. So I think this is a completely unexplored area, and we hope to get involved in working on that problem. So thank you for your patience. No. 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 Yeah. Yeah, I know. Yeah, Victor, but I'm sorry, we disagree with your results. I mean, we don't get something like a minus 0.2. And we have demonstrated that that in the experimental range the data can be collapsed onto the same scaling function. So that pretty well tells me that we are in a scaling regime. And so and I also showed you where the deviations from the scaling function occur. And you are quite right, for a larger Prandtl number they occur at larger Rayleigh number, but you know, not dramatically larger Rayleigh number. Well, the data are there, Victor. You can look at them. I think Bill George wants to say something. By the way, if you want to, I have the plot. Yeah. That's, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That'll probably happen on the other side too.
You mean the two will switch role? On the other side of one. Well, this is a very interesting issue. And that's why we really want to push in, you know, in that direction. But
there's a second thing, I think, kind of solid one, what you discovered. And that is, I think it's wrong to say the Prandtl number is not there. What's probably correct to say is that it's all been captured in the Rayleigh number. Because there are all kinds of possibilities. You have Grashof numbers, you have Rayleigh numbers, you can have any combination of the positivity of the combination, the infinity of the denominator.
Well, Bill, all I can tell you is what's physically measurable, and you know, you can interpret it in terms of whatever variables you'd like to define.
But clearly, there really is a whatever the power is, we don't know. Yeah. It's interesting to see
what happens. Yeah. This, by the way, is a parametric plot of your function, which does not work all that well. Maybe. Who's next? Panga. Sorry, Boris. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. The cells all have had the same diameter so far.
But in general, I can get deeper and higher, so then I can fix the height of the thing.
Sure. I don't know. I haven't done that. Now, I mean, do I believe it will be? Yes, I believe it will be, but I don't know that it will be. Right? When I say I know, I speak as an experimentalist, and that means I have to do the measurement. Right. Well, I think Boris has been.
Try
target for the crossover? Could you just show the data by crossover to, you know, from the corner to the
Yeah, that that doesn't work because I have. I mean, there is the Grossman-Lose prediction for that regime, which has a crossover from a quarter to a third, and that doesn't work. That is in our paper, but I can't find it now. I don't seem to have it here. Anyway, a quarter to one third doesn't work. Okay, because that is the Grossman-Lose prediction for Prandtl near one. Right, there you cross from different regimes. I should let Detlef speak about that. But so that doesn't work. But huh? As you say, it should not work. But a quarter to 3/7, which should be relevant at high Prandtl numbers, does work. But the Oregon data are at lower Prandtl numbers where you get different crossover. There you should get, according to Detlef, a quarter to one-third. And within their experimental resolution, that does seem to work, although it is not as detailed a test as in our case.
Okay, we've got a 5-minute break where you can argue, and then we're going to get back.